First, today we'll start with an introduction and then quickly get into the materials and methods, follow that with results, and then a quick conclusion. So lutein and zeaxanthin are two of several carotenoids synthesized by plants. Carotenoids are composed of 8 isoprene monomers and function under low light conditions as light harvesting compounds, under high light conditions as photoprotectants, both in non-photochemical quenching and quenching of free radicals. Looking at a typical photosystem with the reaction center in the middle in blue, and that's surrounded by the chlorophyll pigments in green, you can see the carotenoid pigments in yellow closely associated with the chlorophyll pigments and integral to the success of the photosystem. Carotenoids are synthesized from the dimerization of geranyl-geranyl pyrophosphate to phytoene. Phytoene then proceeds through a series of desaturation reactions until it reaches lycopene, which is then used to synthesize a number of carotenoids, including zeaxanthin and lutein. Now, tembotrione, mesotrione, and topramezone are 3 hydroxyphenylpyruvate dioxygenase, or HPPD, inhibiting herbicides. Inhibition of HPPD indirectly inhibits both phytoene desaturase and plastoquinone synthesis. Now, going back to the carotenoid biosynthesis pathway, you can see that phytoene desaturase is required for the conversion of phytoene to phytofluene. So if you apply an HPPD inhibiting herbicide and the plant is unable to synthesize phytoene desaturase, carotenoid production cannot happen. In susceptible species, this manifests itself as a whitening of the newest leaf tissues. Now, evaluating differences in activity of these HPPD inhibiting herbicides is usually accomplished through one of 3 methods. The first method would be sampling the leaf tissue and then extracting the chlorophyll and carotenoid pigments from that leaf tissue and using spectroscopy to quantify exactly how much of each compound is in the leaf tissue. This method is time consuming, so more commonly they are just evaluated visually, evaluating differences between treatments visually. And another method uses chlorophyll fluorescence yield, or FV over FM, to quantify or just determine differences in activity. So why are we interested in chlorophyll fluorescence when we talk about HPPD inhibiting herbicides? Well, again, looking at a different diagram of a photosystem, the photosynthetically active radiation being absorbed by the photosystem is represented by the yellow arrow. And typically we think of this photosynthetically active radiation being used for photochemistry or to produce energy for photosynthesis. But under normal conditions, there are actually other fates of this light as well. One of them is that this excess energy is quenched using non-photochemical quenching, and this is accomplished via carotenoids. Also, this energy can be used for free radical production, which is highly damaging to chlorophyll membranes and other components of cells. But this can also be quenched by carotenoids. And the other is chlorophyll fluorescence, and this can be measured using a chlorophyll fluorimeter. Now, if we make an application of an HPPD inhibiting herbicide, we inhibit carotenoid biosynthesis. Inhibiting carotenoid biosynthesis eliminates non-photochemical quenching as a means of dispersing this energy. So that energy has to go somewhere, and it goes to an increase in free radical production, which we see as a destruction of chlorophyll compounds and a whitening of the leaf tissue. And we also see an increase in chlorophyll fluorescence, which we can measure with the chlorophyll fluorimeter. So that leads us to our objective, which is to evaluate the ability of chlorophyll fluorescence yield and visual bleaching to estimate chlorophyll and carotenoid concentrations following HPPD inhibiting herbicide applications to both Riviera common Bermuda grass and Tifway hybrid Bermuda grass. Now, for the sake of time today, I will only present the Riviera common Bermuda grass data. So we conducted this in 2009 in a greenhouse. We transplanted mature Riviera Bermuda grass plugs into a greenhouse to a growing medium in 4-centimeter pots. The growing medium was a perlite, vermiculite, and peat moss. We allowed these plugs to acclimate for approximately 4 weeks until we applied the HPPD inhibiting herbicides mesotrione, topramezone, and tembotrione. Methylated seed oil surfactant was included. So we applied each of these 3 herbicides at 3 separate rates, low, medium, and high. This forms a 3x3 factorial treatment design. The low rate represented the maximum labeled use rate for each herbicide. Mesotrione labeled in turf, and then tapramazone and tematrione are labeled in corn. We made these comparisons to an untreated control. So at 3, 7, 14, 21, 28, and 35 days after application, we assessed all treatments for, first, for visual bleaching. We did this on a 0 to 100% scale. 0% represents no visual bleaching, and 100% represents complete visual complete bleaching of the leaf tissue. We also evaluated chlorophyll fluorescence yield, or FVFM. We did this using an OS1FL pulse modulated fluorimeter. We used a single newly emerged leaf to make each measurement, and we took two subsamples per plot on different leaves. And again, this was done at 3, 7, 14, 21, 28, and 35 days after application. Now, after we were done with these two measurements, we removed all the leaf tissue from taller than 2 centimeters. We removed this leaf tissue with scissors and immediately placed it in liquid nitrogen to halt all metabolic processes, and then we transferred to storage at negative 80 degrees Celsius for future extractions. So the leaf tissue was then taken for extractions. We first homogenized it using a mortar and pestle with liquid nitrogen, and then we took 1/4 gram of this sample and put it into a test tube, and then used a tissue grinder to further homogenize the sample while it was saturated in tetrahydrofuran, allowing us to extract the chlorophyll and carotenoid compounds. So after it was homogenized, we put it on a centrifuge at 500 Gs for approximately 3 minutes. This allowed us to easily extract the supernatant from the leaf tissue. This supernatant was then saved for further analysis. So this process was repeated approximately 3 to 4 times until there was no more color in the leaf tissue pellet, and we assumed we had extracted all chlorophyll and carotenoid pigments. So all the supernatant was evaporated to a uniform volume of 5 milliliters and then placed in vials for HPLC analysis. Our mobile phase for the HPLC analysis consisted of 11% methyl tert butyl ester and 89% methanol. The solid phase was a C30 reverse phase column maintained at 30 degrees Celsius. An absorbance for the chlorophyll A compounds was measured at 652 nanometers, and for chlorophyll B and the carotenoid pigments was measured at 453 nanometers. The experimental design was a 3x3 factorial treatment design that I had stated earlier. Experimental units were arranged in a randomized complete block design with 3 replications and then 2 runs in 2009. There were no significant treatment by run interactions, so data were pooled across runs, and that will be presented today. The analysis of variance was conducted in SAS, and then regressions of visual bleaching and chlorophyll fluorescence upon pigment concentrations were conducted in GraphPad PRISM. So now for the results. A quick ANOVA table with visual bleaching on the top and chlorophyll fluorescence on the bottom. Herbicide was significant from 7 to 35 days after application for both visual bleaching and chlorophyll fluorescence, and the effective rate was significant on a few dates. And due to the herbicide by rate interactions, I will only present the highest rate for each herbicide today. So just to give you an idea what things look like about 14 days after application, there were significant differences visually. It was very visually striking, the differences in the activities of these compounds. And this can be represented graphically with visual tissue bleaching on the y-axis and days after application on the x-axis. A couple trends apparent here is that tematrione and tapramazone caused significantly more visual bleaching than mesotrione, represented by the green line. And also that the peak of visual bleaching was 14 to 21 days after application. Visually, to give you an idea, this is the high rate of mesotrione 14 days after application, very little visual bleaching. The high rate of tapramazone 14 days after application, much different than the mesotrione, with a high degree of visual bleaching. Here's the chlorophyll fluorescence yield data. Very similar trends with the visual bleaching data, where we saw much greater reductions in chlorophyll fluorescence yield from tapramazone and tematrione, with the peak of this reduction around 14 days after application. And also we saw significant reductions in chlorophyll fluorescence yield from all herbicide treatments 3 days after application. So here is the results of the regression analysis. This is lutein regressed upon both visual bleaching and chlorophyll fluorescence. Visual bleaching on the left, chlorophyll fluorescence on the right. Now there are three things to take from this graph. The first is that there were significant relationships 7 to 35 days after application for both visual bleaching and chlorophyll fluorescence. The second thing is that all R-square values were below 0.62 for regardless of application date, or sorry, observation date, indicating that the ability of chlorophyll fluorescence and visual bleaching to accurately estimate lutein concentrations is relatively poor. The third thing to take from this graph, or this table, sorry, is that highest R-square values were observed at the peak of visual bleaching 14 to 28 days after application. Here's total chlorophyll upon visual bleaching and chlorophyll fluorescence, the same setup here, and the same three trends, or the same three things are important here. Significant relationships for visual bleaching 3 to 28 days after application. Significant relationships between total chlorophyll and chlorophyll fluorescence 7 to 28 days after application. And again, all the R-square values here are below 0.61, indicating the ability of visual bleaching and chlorophyll fluorescence to estimate chlorophyll concentrations is relatively poor. And again, the peak of visual bleaching coincided with the highest R-square values for both visual bleaching and chlorophyll fluorescence. Here's zeaxanthin. Same thing, regressions with visual bleaching, chlorophyll fluorescence. Much weaker relationships here overall. Significance, not significant on as many dates, 3 to 14 days after application and 35 days after application for visual bleaching, and only 7, 14, and 35 days after application for zeaxanthin and chlorophyll fluorescence. And here, all R-square values, these were the lowest R-square values we observed, all below 0.42. Now, not the same trends with the peak of visual bleaching coinciding with the highest R-square values. The most important thing here is that all R-square values are below 0.42. So to conclude, regression relationships were significant in most instances. However, all these R-square values were below 0.65, indicating the ability of all these evaluation methods to indicate chlorophyll and carotenoid pigment concentrations is relatively poor. So as I stated in my objective slide, our objective was to evaluate chlorophyll fluorescence and visual bleaching to estimate chlorophyll and carotenoid pigment concentrations, and very clearly that neither of these methods is suitable, a suitable substitute for HPLC analysis in detecting these compounds on Bermuda grass, the activity and reduction in pigments of these compounds after HPPD inhibiting herbicide application. With that, I'd like to thank my advisor, Dr. Brosman, Dr. Horvath, Dr. Kopsel, Mr. Greg Breeden, and the Turfgrass team at Tennessee. And now I will take any questions if there's time.
Do we have time quickly?
Okay. So the question is, what type of regression relationships we think there might be other than just linear?
Any other regression?
No. Quadratic terms were not significant in most cases. There were very few. Mostly the linear term was the only one significant. So I don't know that there would be anything there looking at quadratic relationships with pigment regressions. Does that answer your question?
Okay.
Next question.
When you measured the fluorescence criteria,
was it a dark depth? It was a light adapted. It was a pulse modulated fluorimeter, but these were light adapted. We weren't so much interested in absolute chlorophyll fluorescence values, but more comparing them across treatments.
What was the angle required for the
canopy? The angle of the chlorophyll fluorimeter towards the canopy was about 45 degrees. Yes. Have we tried to use digital image analysis to measure the injury? And the answer is no, but that would be definitely something that would be interesting in future research. We did try to use a couple other quantitative evaluation methods, but due to our experimental setup, it didn't quite work out. But yeah, definitely digital image analysis would be interesting.
Okay, that's all the questions we have time for right now. Thanks, Matt.